change.com.
Radio for Catholic and other Christians. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
The Subliminal Academy for Covert Messaging. That's right. I'm attempting in all ways that I can to not only communicate overtly, shut the door, I'm not heating the barn, with parents and children, but in fact to make use of subliminal messages. I'm not heating the backyard. When talking with children, Leroy Lodge, no bothering you. These subliminal messages are so subtle, they are below the sensory perception threshold. That's exactly right. Seems the way it was when I was a kid. Used to walk 16 miles. But they have an effect. They have an effect. That's exactly right. We were grateful when we were children for what little we had. Because what they do is they alter the psyche without the person's awareness. Exactly. Listen to what your mother says. Do what your mother says. Nobody gets hurt. Dr. Ray Garendi here. The doctor is in 877-573-7825. That's the number to call to get onto the program. Call-in program. You're the call-in-ers. I'm the call-in-ee. Andrew Krucek is there waiting like a catcher on a baseball team for your call to come in. And then he either swats it up to the computer or he simply says, "You're out." Andrew does not have a power pitching fastball, so most of the time you're not out. He lets you straight through. That's the kind of guy he is. I am a shrink. I don't shrink here. Shrink at the office. Shrink doing other things. Shrink from lifting weights as my discs get compacted from holding this massive amount of weight on my shoulder. But we can talk here about things that matter to you. Friends, job, situation in your life, something you want to get another heads up on or another head next to yours, 877-573-7825. You've heard it. I've heard it. We all think it. America is over-medicated. Children are over-medicated. Adults, as opposed to many adults, are over-medicated. Surveys are coming out regarding the use of medication across the board. Medication can be a helpful thing, truly can be a helpful thing. The question becomes, do we reach too quickly? Recent survey said this. In 1996, approximately 13 million adult Americans were on antidepressant medications of various types. 2005, 9 years later, that number had swollen to 26 million. Doubled. 26 million Americans, for those of you who are aware of your population statistics, is roughly, it's 10% or more of the adult population. Explanations? Well, the most common one is we've gotten better at diagnosing the condition. Therefore, more awareness leads to more treatment. My problem with that explanation is that we're not talking 1941 versus 2005. We're talking 1996 versus 2005. Were we poorly aware of depression in 1996? Is this something that only in the last several years we've become cutting edge on recognizing and diagnosing? Especially something as common and widespread as depression in psychology and in medicine? That's a weak one as far as I'm concerned. Well, with the economy you know, with the changes in stress and structure. Well, first of all, this was 2005. The economy was booming by every stretch. So you can't really blame the economy. Well, I think we're more aware of the wide range of treatment options available for dealing with depression. We've had antidepressant medication for decades. We have a wider variety of them now, of course, supposedly newer types, which, interestingly enough, the research kind of doesn't support that they're a whole lot better than the older types, other than less side effects. So what's going on? Well, my opinion is we've become, as a culture, a less happy culture. We're less contented. I dare say we're a little more miserable. If you look at a wide variety of societal stats, you've got broken marriages at an enormously high rate, and they've been there for decades now. Okay, in the 60s, the divorce rate in the 60s was under 10%. Okay, well, it's exploded. Out of wedlock childbirth, 40% now. 40% of all babies born in the U.S. out of wedlock. Nearly half. The percentage of people living together prior to marriage in the, I think it's the 23 to 35 age group or 23 to 40 age group, I'm not sure the exact years, the young adults, is higher than the people number married. You look at religious statistics, we're becoming a less religious culture. Ever so slowly, more people are saying they're atheist. More people are saying religion is not a major force in their lives. And we could go on and on. But you're looking at a culture that much of the social glue that kept people in shape emotionally, much of that social glue is melting. It's being scraped away. And as a result, more people are not happy with their lives. We're chasing a different way to live. And if it doesn't work, to the degree that you go against the way God says to do it, you're asking for trouble. You're asking for risk. You're asking for emotional distress. God says, here's the way to live. Don't live that other way because that other way causes problems for you. Oh, no, 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 no. We're going to live that other way because we know better. And we now have over 10%. That's huge. Huge. Of the adult American population on medication for depression.
But Dr. A, isn't depression a biomedical problem? Isn't it biochemical? I mean, I've seen the ads on TV. Depression is an illness.
Yes and no. The majority of depressions are life situational. The majority of depressions are bound up in the way we think, in the way we look at life, in the way we behave. A percentage seem to be biochemically related, but that percentage does not seem to be the majority of depressions. So, well, doesn't the medication work? Yes and no. In the sense that approximately 60 to 70% of people report or evidence doing better on medication. But here is the problem. Effectiveness of antidepressant medication is roughly 60 to 70%. Approximately 40 to 50% of people get better, report improvement, report less depression because of placebo. That's right. The expectation that they're going to get better. We can talk further, but Colleen's waiting patiently, so let me take a break. Right now here on The Doctor Is In, 877-573-7825. Take a break. When we come back, your calls, and maybe a little bit more of this whole idea of how many of us are going to be on meds. Dr. Ray, be back.
Dr. Ray has more great advice soon. Don't go anywhere.
Few people are fortunate enough to combine a career with an opportunity to serve the church directly. Becoming a lay minister is such a fortunate combination. And Detroit Sacred Heart Major Seminary is preparing men and women today for a first or even second career in lay ministry. Lay ministers are workers in the vineyard whose job is to change hearts and bring people closer to God. They serve as youth ministers, hospital chaplains, religious educators, and in many other fields. Students choose from certificate and degree programs in theology and pastoral studies, tailored just for the laity. Evening classes, satellite locations, and our easy-to-reach campus make it convenient to begin preparing for your new career and your new calling. Learn more at Sacred Heart Major Seminary's website, shms.edu. Hurry though, new student enrollment ends August 15th. Classes start September 8th. That's shms.edu.
The Ave Maria Communications Guild invites you to activate your faith. Couples of all denominations are invited to bolster their marriage through National Marriage Encounter beginning Friday, August 7th at the Capuchin Retreat Center in Washington. This retreat weekend will be guided by married couples who desire to make their lives together the best they can be. To register, call 586-838-4447. Widowed of all ages are invited to attend a social hour at Corsi's Italian Restaurant Wednesday, August 12th. Corsi's is located on West 7 Mile in Livonia, and the event cost of $12 includes dinner buffet, dessert, beverage, and gratuity. Please RSVP by August 10th. For further details, call 734-459-4316. You can find these and many more events at our website, AveMariaRadio.net. To become a member of the Guild, call 877-288-1077.
Dr. Ray Grady here on The Doctor Is In. Thanks for joining me Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, Est. For those of you who took Latin, you know that is the verb is. Of course, just all depends what you mean by is. A lot of religions, a lot of denominations don't think when our Lord said, "This is my body," that he meant is. He meant something else. Colleen from Ontario. Hi, Colleen. Dr. Ray here.
Oh, hi, Dr. Ray.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you. So I'm having trouble with anxiety. It's funny you were talking about over-medicated and whatnot. I was wondering if I should maybe consider using medication.
Well, I thought about that when I saw your call, too. I thought, okay, here I go into this rant and rave about over-medication, and this poor lady is sitting up there thinking, you know, a little bit of meds could help me here. And you know, Colleen, they could.
Right.
I will share with you, I saw in the Harvard Mental Health Newsletter, I like it, I get it, they had a summary of medication working for anxiety. And they said, after a mega review of the studies on it, that approximately one in three people with complaints of anxiety as the number one complaint get better on medication over and above placebo. In other words, if I gave you a sugar pill, you'd have probably 30, 40, 50% chance of feeling better simply because you think you're getting something for your anxiety.
Right.
However, of the studies they looked at regarding anxiety, regarding depression, and regarding obsessive-compulsive problems, anxiety was the one most responsive to medication over and above placebo, one out of three. Obsessive-compulsive disorder was one out of six, got better over and above placebo, and depression was one out of 10 over and above placebo. How long have you had these? It sounds like they're panic attacks. Is that
it probably is, yeah.
How long?
14 years.
That's a while, my dear.
Yeah. I dealt with it on and off since I was 16.
How
so.
Frequent?
Pardon?
How frequent?
Well, lately they've been, I don't know, once a week. But once a week.
Are they in certain places? Out,
yeah.
Out in crowds, in a restaurant, in shopping, traffic?
It used to deal all around with eating with other people at their homes or restaurants.
Okay.
But now it's anywhere. Usually with other people, but sometimes with my own husband and children.
Do you leave the situation?
I try. Sometimes that's all I want to do.
So
but
I
try to deal with it, too.
Okay.
But it
okay.
doesn't always work out. Then I get sick.
Okay, my dear. Well, I'm going to recommend a couple of things for you.
Okay.
First of all, I'll give you just a basic primer of education here
mm-hmm.
on panic attacks. If you would see the list of physical reasons that can cause a surge in anxiety, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's just your body reacting. Adrenaline is coursing through your bloodstream. That's okay, my dear. No problem. I'm getting anxious about that kid. Coursing through your bloodstream. As a result, you have the exact same fear reaction that you would have if somebody walked into your house with a loaded gun. Your body is dumb. Your body does what your brain tells it to do. Your body does the chemicals that are coursing through it. And so you have this surge. And you don't know what causes it. I don't have any idea. There's no danger sitting and eating with my husband and children. Right? Colleen, still there, dear?
Yes. Yeah, sorry. Okay. It cuts out for some reason.
That's okay. Well, that's the Canadian socialized telephone system or whatever it is. So your body just has these surges. Now, you had this first time when you were 16. You probably didn't know what it was. It terrified you. You were scared. You thought you were losing your mind. You thought you were going to faint. You were going to get sick.
Yes.
You thought you were crazy. You thought you were having a heart attack. Those are the standard interpretations that people put on their first panic attack.
Right.
And then what happens is, after you get a clean bill of health, after things get checked out, many people still believe something is wrong. Others think, okay, nothing is wrong, but this feeling's terrible and horrible, and I hope it never, ever happens again. And they get scared about being scared.
That's the main thing.
Yeah. It's called, or the shrinks call it anticipatory anxiety.
Okay.
When's it going to happen again?
Yes.
And so what we tend to do is we avoid those areas that we think are most threatening. I don't think I want to go out to eat because your brother's going to be there and he's going to have his kids there and there's going to be like 21 of us. Just tell him I don't feel well. Just tell him I don't feel well. It's just not a good night.
Yeah.
And you start to avoid and retreat. Well, all that does, of course, is make it worse.
Right.
Because then you're less able to do anything, as you've seen. More and more things become taboo.
Mm-hmm.
Now, first thing I want to tell you, my dear. First thing I want to tell you, you got to know this. The vast, vast, vast majority of the time, the anxiety is not going to hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
It is unpleasant. It feels yucky, yucky. But it will not hurt. You will not lose your mind. You will not have a heart attack. You, like you said, you get sick to your stomach.
I do.
But even, okay, even in a worst case scenario
mm-hmm.
that you have to vomit.
Right.
Plan for your vomit route. In other words, if you feel so queasy that you have to go get rid of it, do it and come back.
Right.
Because I don't want you thinking like most people think that the anxiety has control of me.
Mm-hmm.
It controls me. I don't control it.
Right.
And once that happens, it's like this big black cloud following you around at all times, waiting to rain on you.
Yeah.
I know, my dear. I know. Boy, there's so much more we could talk about with this. Couple more bullet points, then I'll give you a suggestion on the medication thing. I can't recommend or not recommend medication, but I'll give you some thoughts.
Right.
you are able to somewhat rewire your body by exposing yourself to those situations that are threatening and working through them.
Right.
And realizing that within 20 minutes to a half an hour, that anxiety attack is going to pass. You've had that happen, I'm sure.
Yes.
Where you've been in a situation, you felt it coming on, your breathing got shallow, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and for whatever the reason, you did not leave, and then, yeah, you settled back down. You never quite were totally calm, but you settled down into a tolerable level.
Yes,
I know. Very common pattern. To the degree that you can do that, you will get a sense of mastery over some of this.
Right.
You won't view it as, I'm done, it controls me, I'm going to be miserable, I might as well just go in my bedroom and sit because I can't come out.
Yeah.
Okay. Secondly, nobody really notices you're anxious, believe it or not. They have done study after study after study looking at people who think everybody knows how miserable I'm feeling. They've got to tell I'm a wretched emotional wreck. No, they don't, dear. They do not, because anxiety is predominantly an internal state.
Yep.
They don't know it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thirdly, medication can help. It can certainly take the edge off. It can be used as needed. If you want to go to your that family doctor is the first place most people go. But if you want to get a good psychiatrist, they can say, all right, what are you asking here? You know, how often do you have these particular surges of anxiety? And would you like something to help tone it down as you need it?
I've been prescribed Ativan before.
Okay, and that's real common. Okay. It doesn't mean that you're this emotional misfit. It doesn't mean that you're this crazy person who needs drugs.
Right.
It simply means that, okay, you're going to give yourself a little bit of help in attempting to conquer this. Now, I would also suggest, when people, I see a lot of folks with anxiety problems.
Mm-hmm.
When people come to me, one of the first things I do is try to help them understand what they're dealing with. What makes the anxiety get on a roll is when they don't understand it and they become scared of it.
Right.
And that's usually back in the early stages.
Mm-hmm.
And what then tends to happen is that it's like a feedback on a microphone. And that's the process. You know, if back when you were 16, somebody would have said, Colleen, okay, let me explain this to you. Let me help you understand this, and let me tell you what this is not, okay? So you might have not gotten on quite the roll.
Right.
Okay. Now, here's the other things too, dear. Fatigue,
mm-hmm.
Maybe low blood sugar, standard stresses of life,
mm-hmm.
lack of sleep, those can all predispose you to a little anxiety surge. Very easy. Pregnancy, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Not getting sleep when you're dealing with a little one.
Mm-hmm.
That can all do it too, because it creates upheaval in your body.
Okay.
And when you've got that upheaval, your body's more likely to go, okay?
Okay.
God bless you, dear.
Thank you.
Call me back with more questions. I'll talk to you soon. This is Dr. Ray here. All right, when we come back, Tanya from Colorado Springs. Boy, they got a tall mountain over there in Colorado Springs. 877-573-7825. Number to call to get onto the program. Delighted to have you with me. This is Dr. Ray. Okay. Be back here, hopefully, in a couple of minutes.
This is Life News Radio. I'm Jim Anderson. The Associated Press is coming under criticism from pro-life advocates who say its recent wrap-up article on the health care debate is misleading. AP writer Charles Babington wrote a fact-check story attempting to make the case that abortion is not included in the health care bills and that President Barack Obama doesn't want it to be included. But pro-life advocates say Obama never said that and that abortion is definitely in the bill. While both House and Senate bills for government-run health care give abortion funding and mandate abortion coverage and insurance, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi continues dodging questions about whether she supports abortion funding in health care plans. The one thing she is clear about is that abortion, she promises, will not stand in the way of us advancing the health care legislation. This is Life News Radio. The oldest organization offering help for women with emergency pregnancies was started in Toronto in 1968 and has hundreds of offices now in the U.S. and around the world. Birthright is ready for your call 24/7. When you know someone who needs support or if you're ready to help, call the Birthright Hotline, 800-550-4900. 800-550-4900. Bobby Schindler, the brother of Terry Schiavo, knows a thing or two about health care rationing. Forced to sit idly by as his sister's estranged husband deprived her of food and water for a period of 13 days before she died, Schindler is concerned the government-run health bills in Congress will foster rationing. For pro-life headlines you can read in less than a minute each day delivered to your email address, sign up at lifenews.com. This has been Life News Radio.
Dr. Ray Garrity here, an old-fashioned dad trapped in a liberal arts-educated psychologist's body. But I'm overcoming it, using that aspect of my will and common sense to overcome some of the unrealistic notions that I was exposed to. Doctor is in, 877-573-7825. My website, drray.com, drray.com. Website of Ave Maria Radio, who produces this program, avemariaradio.net. One big, long run-on word that Mrs. Elgis, my sixth-grade teacher, would have slashed to ribbons with a red pen, and she wouldn't have worried about the color. She wouldn't have gone through her little pencil box and tried to find a soft purple, a salmon, maybe something in a puce. No, it was blood red. My papers looked like they had been in a knife fight. And thank you, Mrs. Elgis and Mrs. Hurst, Mrs. Randall, Mrs. Becker, Mrs. Brocker, and Mrs. Penman. Can you do that? Can you name your teachers from sixth grade all the way back? Well, I don't really have to worry about it because all my teachers in elementary school are either 172 years old or passed away by now. All right. What else I got to do here? Well, let's go to Tanya from Colorado Springs because she raises a number of interesting points that I will skillfully use to educate the general listening public. Tanya, are you there, dear?
Yes, I am.
Thank you for the call.
Thank you for taking my call.
Now, is this child, this young rapscallion, is this your oldest? That's okay.
She is my oldest.
Do you want to put her on speakerphone so we can all talk?
What's that?
Do you want to put her on speakerphone so all three of us can talk?
She might get mad and really want to take the phone from me.
So. Okay. All right.
But I can put her on speakerphone if you don't mind.
Doesn't she have her cell phone yet?
Oh, well, she does have an old one of ours.
Okay. That's good. You might don't connect it until she's about three.
Yeah.
Okay, don't want to be indulgent here.
I know. Well, yeah, if she could, she has mom and dad as often as she can. So she has, she's the oldest, but she's the only one right now. There's one in the womb on the way in 3 months.
Okay. Now, you think that this 14-month-old youngster is strong-willed, correct?
Extremely strong-willed.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to ask you some questions, and you just answer yes and no, okay?
Okay.
All right. What's her name, dear?
Her name is Grace.
Grace. Oh, isn't that sweet? We Catholics name our kids Works, but Protestants name their Grace. No, I'm teasing. So, is Grace, does she have a conscience?
I guess, I don't know.
No. I'll tell you right now. No, of course not.
Okay.
She has no conscience. Does she have any impulse control?
Probably not.
No, she has none. Is she, for the most part, completely self-centered?
Yes, she's
14 months old, of course.
Yep.
Does she have any social skills to speak of?
Yeah, she tells everyone hi that she sees.
Okay, so in the realm of social skills, she can say hi. But in fact, she has no social skills.
Okay,
no. Now, Tanya, she has no conscience. She has no social skills. She has no impulse control. She is completely, totally self-centered. She wants what she wants the instant she wants it.
She's
14 months old. So to look at her and say, oh, she's extremely strong-willed, implies that we expect that she's going to cooperate with us at some kind of semi-mature level. See, my dear, you have fallen prey to the new way of thinking about children.
Okay.
For much of human history, definitely in our culture, we looked at kids and we realized what they were. Little sinners. Okay? They want what they want. They're not going to be cooperative. We parents have to teach them over the course of many years how to be cooperative and how to develop virtue. But the new and improved and modern, enlightened, kind-hearted way of looking at children, which is, oh, they all just want to be pleasant and compliant, and all we have to do is talk to them in the right way, and we can reason with them. And when that doesn't work, and it does not work for 90% of children, we then think, well, obviously, this kid's just strong-willed. That's all. This kid is just defiant. This is just a difficult child. This is a mind of her own here. This is a 14-month-old gone on 14-year-old. This is a challenging child. This is a high-spirited child. This is a high-maintenance child. This is a difficult child. And those are all the terms we fling, correct?
Mm-hmm.
You've heard them among your friends. I know that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm here to tell you it's all nonsense. Because your little daughter may or may not be strong-willed compared to other kids. But one thing we do know, she's 14 months old. When you're 14 months old, hey, flat out, woman, I want to do what I want. Get out of the way.
Yes.
I don't want to listen to you. I don't want to wear that. I don't want to eat that. I don't want to sit there. I don't want to go there. I don't want to lay down. I don't want to get up. I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to look at you. I don't want to... That's 14 months old. So as a result, you are just beginning, my dear, just beginning the whole process of socialization and discipline. You're just starting. You're like two steps out of the starting gate.
Okay.
If you wish, now, even though she may be a bit on the young side, you can begin disciplining now. You could sit her on the steps. You can sit her in her high chair. You can put her in her crib. You can put her in a playpen when she acts obnoxious and she starts her little hissy fits and everything she does to resist. You can do that. Now, that's not going to make her stop. But what it is going to do is it's going to start to train her over time so that as she gets older, she will start to understand there are certain things that are appropriate and good to do, certain things are bad to do, certain things are going to happen if you act one way, certain things are going to happen if you act another way. And she still may not be able to truly understand the motives because she's not 7, 8, 9, 10 yet.
Yeah.
But she will start to get a sense of how to behave. You know, if she's throwing fits and you pick her up and you put her in a crib, you put her in a playpen, well, after you doing that about 75 times, and that's a low number, by the way, she'll start to realize, hey, whenever I do that, this happens. Well, I don't like this. So inch by inch by inch over the course of usually years, she'll start to realize, I better not do that. I'm getting a little older now. I have a little more neurological self-control. I can exert some kind of impulse restraining mechanism on myself, and I won't necessarily throw as many fits. I won't necessarily be as loud or as long, and I'll pick and choose my fits better. If I'm 4 years old and I don't have a cell phone yet, okay, then I will throw a fit. But I'm not going to throw a fit because they want me to sit still in church.
Yeah.
Okay?
Okay, and then I have a quick question just related to that, because one of my friends, she called you and she said, well, maybe do time out with her and sit with her, because she won't sit somewhere by herself. And I hate to put her in her high chair because we have troubles with eating already. She's underweight.
Oh, that's not going to have anything to do with eating.
Okay.
I'm not going to make her hate eating.
Okay, so, and the same with the crib thing, like, I don't want her to...
How many parenting books have you been reading, Tanya?
I haven't been reading any, but
You've been listening to people who do, huh?
Yes.
I know it, because they say, don't put her in her crib, because a crib is a positive place, and you want her to have positive feelings towards sleep, and if you put her in her crib, she'll have ambivalence towards sleep. Yeah, I know that one. I would say this. If you want to put her in timeout, make sure it's someplace where she can't get out, whether it's in a playpen or whether it's in a little refrigerator box or whatever you want to get the let her play in, or if you block off an area of the room that she can't come out that's safe, either that or you're forced to hold her there. But at this point, my best piece of advice I'm going to give you, when you start using timeout, wherever that is, corner, steps, chair, whatever, make it stick. Because if you don't, then 3, 4, 5 years from now, you're still going to be battling this, and it's going to be ugly. The number one discipline problem I deal with in my office with kids under 10 is that the parent cannot make the discipline stick.
Okay.
Okay, honey?
Sounds great.
All right, I'll talk to you.
Thank you.
Bye. It's true. It's true. And by the way, Jill, I'll be right with you in a second there. How many times, for those of you who are inveterate women's magazine, parent magazine readers, how many times have you come across some suggestion regarding timeout, and they always say a brief timeout? You ever notice that? They always say brief. It's kind of like conservative Catholic. They go together when people want to qualify. Brief timeout. Of those articles that still actually recommend timeout, because an awful lot don't. A lot of child development people, a lot of psychologists, a lot of social workers, a lot of counselors, a lot of educators, they don't like timeout. They think it's too punitive. Okay? But of those who still recommend it, how many articles have you read that actually offer ideas regarding what to do if the kid doesn't stay? They all just assume the child's going to go, oh, mother, did you want me to sit over here? Why, of course. Where's the timer, mother? I'll set it for you so you don't forget. Also, would you mind putting some music on? Either Kumbaya or Michael Row the Boat Ashore. I think that's a nice song for me to sing while I'm here and I'm developing self-control. Mother, don't forget. I love you. I don't know what planet. Jill from Buffalo, New York. Hi, Jill.
Hi.
Thanks
Very
for calling.
Funny.
Well, I heard you giggling.
You have
an adopted black daughter.
Right.
Now, I got 3 adopted black children and 2 adopted biracial children.
Well, I have another adopted black son and a son that's biracial also, but my daughter's the only one that, well, my son that's black is only 21 months, but my daughter's going to be 5. And she actually said this like a couple of years ago,
mm-hmm.
and then I didn't hear it again, and then now she's said it quite a bit lately.
Mm-hmm. Well, my daughter of my 3 black children is the one who also is most aware, shall we say, of skin color. I think it has something to do with being a girl. You know, they're just kind of more aware of life in general.
Right.
I think with my boys, as long as I'm feeding them and and making sure that they know how to use the remote, we're okay. My one son came up to me one time, and he held out his wrist next to mine. I said, Petey, what's your point? He said, look. I said, look at what? He said, I'm darker than you. I said, yeah. Well, he said. I said, well, what are you saying, Pete? Are you saying simply because your skin is a bit darker than mine that somehow we're really different? Is that what you're saying, buddy? And he went, well, no. I said, well, what are you saying? Well, then he didn't know what he was really saying, okay?
Right.
And I think with your daughter, you might want to approach it something like that. You might want to say, honey, what are you saying? Well, I don't want to be black. I want to be white. Well, sweetheart, it doesn't matter. Some people have more pigment in their skin than others. That's it. If you want to look different, hey, you look a lot more like me than you look like your dad.
Okay.
Yeah,
what's wrong with your skin color? And she said, I just look so silly.
Well, you got to understand something here, Jill. She's five.
Right.
When you ask a five-year-old why you're thinking that, you're going to get a goofy answer.
Right.
By and large, five-year-olds. You know, we've had a couple of questions, for example, regarding that with my children of another race. But for the most part, our approach, and I think this will probably be you too, your approach is, you are my son. You are my daughter. You couldn't be more my son and daughter than you are. And so, therefore, however different we might look is kind of irrelevant.
Do you think she's... I don't even think she gets the son. And I mean, she knows I'm her mother. She doesn't get that whole...
Well, she's just getting... She's becoming aware that, hey, how come your skin's lighter than mine?
Oh, that's just like, this is what I see type.
Yeah. You got to be careful infusing it with too much meaning, because our culture...
I didn't really want to make it a big deal, but I didn't want to just... Because the first time, I just kind of ignored it. And now that she said it a couple times, I wanted to say something, but...
Yeah, reason it out, you know. My son one time said to me, he used a slang word. I said, what? He said, well, that's how my people talk. And he was about five or six at the time. I said, Pete, your people... He goes, yeah, you know, my ancestors. I said, hey, Pete, I'm your people. I said, I'm your people. He goes, I know, Dad. I was just kind of ripping on you. I said, all right. You know, so I think you answer her question, but you answer it in such a way as if to say, honey, what are you trying to say?
Okay.
And then if she says, I look silly, I'd look at her and go, well, you know what? This is me. I go, you know what, sweetheart? There's a lot of other ways you can look silly than that. You should see what your brothers look like. You want to talk about looking silly? You ever see food coming out of pretty much every body orifice while they eat? Now that's silly.
Okay.
Well, bless you.
Okay.
Hey, I have a book out called Adoption, Choosing It, Living It, Loving It. And I talk about this kind of stuff in the book.
Actually, I know I have it, but I read it, but I don't really remember. I got to read it again.
Oh, man. Jill.
I know.
This is the kind of respect I get. Oh, yeah, I got your book.
I don't remember
anything you said.
Well, we read it and adopted again, so there you go.
Oh, goody. I get partial credit. I get an assist.
Right.
Oh, that's great, Jill. Bless you, honey. Thank you.
Okay.
I'll talk to you.
Take care.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
See that? I get credit. I get part credit. You know, our Lord says take care of the widows and the orphans in St. James, or the Epistle of St. James. Well, hey. If you guys go out and take care of the widows and the orphans, and I got the book, and you read the book, and that spurred you, I get part credit. Like Amway. It's Dr. Ray. I'll be right back.
Call now for great advice from Dr. Ray.
Now, don't you feel better?
Hi, this is Father John Ricardo, inviting you to join me as we explore some of the deepest questions that arise in our hearts. Questions that shape the way we think, the way we speak, and the way we live. For all of these questions, Christ is the answer.
As Father Ricardo continues our study of the Ten Commandments, he looks into the second commandment this week. You shall not utter the name of Yahweh your God to misuse it, for Yahweh will not leave unpunished the man who utters his name to misuse it. Listen to Christ is the Answer Wednesday evenings at 8, Saturday afternoons at 5, and Sunday mornings at 11 on 990 WDEL, 1440 WMAX, and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet.
Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. He is the image of the invisible God. He points us to our destiny. He reveals the dignity of the human person. He is the one who makes known the Father. Christ is the Answer.
Christ is the Answer is brought to you by the Ave Maria Communications Guild.
The Ave Maria Communications Guild invites you to activate your faith. Couples of all denominations are invited to bolster their marriage through National Marriage Encounter beginning Friday, August 7th at the Capuchin Retreat Center in Washington. This retreat weekend will be guided by married couples who desire to make their lives together the best they can be. To register, call 586-838-4447. Widowed of all ages are invited to attend a social hour at Corsi's Italian Restaurant Wednesday, August 12th. Corsi's is located on West 7 Mile in Livonia, and the event cost of $12 includes dinner buffet, dessert, beverage, and gratuity. Please RSVP by August 10th. For further details, call 734-459-4316. You can find these and many more events at our website, AveMariaRadio.net. To become a member of the Guild, call 877-288-1077.
Greg Randy here on Doctors In. Appreciate you joining me. Number to get onto the program is 877-573-7825. Are you average? Most of us don't like to think of ourselves as average, at least in some things. Those of you whose faith is very important to you, would you like to say, well, you know, I'm kind of an average Catholic. Kind of average. I mean, if God took a look at who were his most faithful servants, I'd hit about the 50-55 percentile mark. That's kind of where I'd be. No, if something is more important to you, you don't want to be average. Well, here's some stats. Are you an average American? You are an average American if you were raised Protestant, you believe in God and an afterlife, though you didn't go to church last week. Oh, that's a bad average there. You believe in God and afterlife, but you didn't go to church last week. You're average if you think you will live to be 78. Now, for those of you listening to this program who are over 78, you've got to revamp that. You're already there. You're an average American if you've named your son Michael and your daughter Jennifer. You charge about $2,200 worth of goods per year to your credit card. Well, this must be an old article here, because the average person charges a lot more than that to a credit card. You spend, this isn't pretty. You spend 32% of your workday goofing off for a total of 4 months of extra paid vacation a year. You got that? An average person, I don't know how they quite get these stats, obviously surveys with all the attendant problems that those have. You spend one-third of your employer's day for you goofing off. And this program here is, let's see, come on up. One ends at 56. 56 minutes long. It's got three breaks, nine. Break brings down to about 46, 47 minutes of actual time. I don't goof off that much. I only goof off like 12%. Slackers. You have at least one house pet.
The average American has a house pet, and oh boy, this is sad. Chances are 50-50 that you carry a picture of your pet in your wallet. My daughter was upset about that. My daughter Liz, she's 10. Daddy, mind your wallet? Well, of course, Lizzie. Can I see? Okay. Daddy, that's Max. Yeah, I know. It was when he was a puppy. I got him when he was a puppy. It's cute. Okay. Daddy, that's Max again. Yeah, I know. That's the first time I threw a ball to him. Remember, like, remember how he could jump? Remember that? He took that picture. Daddy, am I behind Max? Well, no, no. I got a picture of Max here. It looks like he's getting a drink out of the hose there. And a little picture of Max getting a drink out of the hose. Well, Lizzie, I'm going to have a picture of you. Mom's getting me one. Well, your senior picture. Senior picture. Your average if you write about 17 checks per month. What's that? One every 2 days? Huh. All right. Yeah, that's probably true. Most people do it other ways. You drive the interstate in town. In-town interstate at an average of 58.6 miles per hour. How old are you? 71? Actually, if it's 55, that's probably about right. But 58.6 would seem like you're crawling on the interstate the way people move now, doesn't it? Average. You think that spouse abuse is a greater sin than spying for a foreign country? Parking in a handicapped zone worse than lying to Congress? This is sad. And smoking cigarettes is worse than producing X-rated videotapes. I've often made the observation, tongue-in-cheek, with a wry smile, that there are only three sins left in this culture. You can do anything you want, but there are three sins left. Spanking, smoking, and having more than 1.61 children. Well, according to this, the average American thinks that smoking is worse than producing X-rated videotapes. That's sad. Sad and sick. On average, if you're a woman, you spend $396 a year on clothes. You wear high heels regularly, even though they give you foot problems. If you're a man, you spend $228 a year on clothes. Mostly for t-shirts, sweatshirts, and gym shoes. That's me anyway. And you let your wife buy all of your underwear. That is true. I have not bought a pair of underwear since 1907. I don't even know what size I wear. Your average if you eat 1.6 bushels of popcorn each year. I hope it is the low-fat, air-popped, low-oil popcorn. You are average if you consider yourself average-looking or better. You're average if you consider yourself better looking than average. And this raises the point from our previous call from Tanya, where she was thinking that her 14-month-old daughter is extremely strong-willed. I asked a group of parents one night, how many of you have strong-willed children? Now, the majority raised their hands. I then said, if most of you think your child is strong-willed, that means, by definition, you have average-willed children. If the most common IQ is 112, not the statistical average of 100, it's 112. Well, that means that the average IQ is 112. If you think your child is strong-willed, And so do the vast majority of parents that you know of think they have a strong-willed child. Then the question needs to be asked, what are we defining? If strong-willed is common-willed, it is average-willed. If it is average-willed, it's not strong-willed anymore. We cannot have the majority of children be strong-willed, because if they were, we'd have to redefine what we mean by strong-willed. Strong-willed is a term used by us parents to indicate that this kid is not cooperating like we think he should. And part of that is that we've been convinced by an overall child-rearing attitude that is pervasive in our culture, mostly proffered by the professionals, that children should be more cooperative than we're experiencing. And therefore, if ours doesn't fall within that expectation of cooperativeness and pleasantness, then obviously he is not the norm. He's strong something, strong-willed, challenging, defiant, oppositional, contrary. Because if he were the norm, he'd be more cooperative. But you see the definitional problem here. Gotta go. Out of time. Hopefully, we'll see you tomorrow, God willing. Same time, same place, same number. Andrew Krucek, thank you for the running of the program. Nothing happens without you, I know that. The only program on Catholic Radio with the broadcast delay set because of the host. They don't know what I'm going to say. 15 seconds for the caller, and it's about an hour delay for me. Try not to be offended. You got kids? Walk with God. Hold them by the hand.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
Father Frank Pavone of Priests for Life. The biggest advantage that pro-abortion forces will have in the next few years is not President Obama sitting in the White House, but us sitting in our houses. Defending the unborn and ending abortion requires that we get involved in constructive activity, that we join or start pro-life groups based on concrete projects, that we volunteer at pregnancy centers, pray at abortion mills, go to pro-life talks and prayer services, and do any of the countless other activities of the pro-life movement. Thank God so many of you are doing this already, and because of that, our cause is making steady progress. Let's make this the biggest recruiting year ever for the cause of life. At priestsforlife.org, you will find out what you can do to end abortion. This is Father Frank Pavone on Ave Maria Radio.
Here's a Family Minute with child psychologist Dr. Ray Guarendi from Ave Maria Radio.
Why do kids act up in public anyway? Well, it depends. See, the pressure's on me. Being a shrink, if my kids act up in public, I can almost hear people thinking, yeah, well, let's just see what Mr. Psycho Man does about that one. But actually, I lose business. I figured it out. If my children act up in public, I lose approximately 20.